Hello, welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. It's Tuesday, January 4th, 2022. I'm Maggie Lake, and here with me today is Tony Greer, editor of The Morning Navigator. Hey there, Tony.
How are you, Maggie? Happy New Year.
Yeah, same to you. Happy New Year. 22 is certainly going to be action-packed. We've seen that already in the first couple of trading sessions. Another interesting mix of news today. Some of yesterday's winners were today's losers, right? Tech stocks down, the NASDAQ, the biggest loser of the major indices, down about 1%, actually over 1%. The S&P 500 did hit a new intraday high earlier, but couldn't hang on as we saw that tech selling. The yield, meanwhile, on the U.S. 10-year treasury edged up to 1.66% after the Labor Department reported a record number of people quit their jobs in November, 4.5 million. And oil rallied with Brent above 80 and WTI at about $77 a barrel. Tony, you're going to do something a little different today and start off with a question because we have a great one from Goncalo on the exchange. I apologize if I'm mispronouncing your name, but they're asking, do you think that energy is up because maybe big hedge funds are deleveraging, and as they were long tech short cyclicals, maybe that's short covering that's behind this? Or do you think it's the beginning of a big rotation year? What do you think about that, given the action we saw today in the market?
That's a great setup for today's market action, actually, Maggie. You know, we're seeing a massive rotation today into natural resources out of technology, as you said, in terms of the energy question, oil question. Yeah, it could be. There's certainly some leverage, some measure of portfolios out there that are probably short some of the cyclical stuff like commodities, WTI, expecting a more deflationary scenario. And probably still left over from the last 10 years, a lot of technology on their pad, right? So, you know, when you come out of the gates in 2022 and the break-even five-year makes a statement like it did yesterday, breaking above all major moving averages, you know, closing on the highs, really, really continuing to be that beacon of inflation for the markets that it's been, that kind of set the tone for me yesterday, right? That was a significant move. Two-year paper once again goes bidless while 5 years break-evens are breaking out. We touch 80 basis points in the two-year. As you astutely point out, we're at 170 in the 10-year now. Yields looking like they can break even higher. So the market is telling us right now that it's expecting that inflationary environment to follow through from last year, which is really a story about, you know, it's a commodity story. You know, it really is, Maggie. We've seen a lot of strength underneath the commodity markets, and they keep bubbling up every time we have a de-risking. So, yeah, I think that traders are starting to get positioned, whether it's for the first quarter or for the whole year. They're piling into natural resources today, that's for sure.
So this feels like it has some staying power, because I think that, when they're asking that, they're kind of wondering, is this a beginning of the year, just kind of temporary repositioning? You see this rotation trade as something that has staying power?
Oh, man, I think it's going to be with us for a while, and I think it can get violent at times. Maggie, I really do. I mean, if we look at the tape today, I've got enough evidence of, you know, there are as many 2 and 3 sigma breakouts in natural resources as there are 2 or 3 sigma breakdowns in technology, right? So these are, when I see major magnitude moves like this, it tells me more that we're at the beginning of a new paradigm rather than at the end of one. So when I look up today and I see, you know, at the top of my leaderboard, we've got John Deere that just came out with an autonomous tractor up 6% today. Then we've got financials, JP Morgan and Bank of America up on the top of the leaderboard. We've got Halliburton and Schlumberger in the oil services space. We've got ExxonMobil and Oxy in the E&P space, Morgan Stanley, XLF. These are all 2 sigma breakouts. And I think that this is going to set the tone here, because on the other side, most importantly, in addition to there being large magnitude moves on the downside in technology, these moves are doing some serious technical damage. Like, these are not 2 or 3 sigma moves to the downside that I want to stand there and catch the falling safe. Right. When I look across these names, Shopify, Cisco, Snapchat, Twitter, the social media sector, right? A lot of this is undoubtedly part of Joe Rogan's media revolution that's taking place outside of our door right now. But a lot of it is that rotation out of technology. And like I said, these stocks are dangling into new lows. These aren't falling back into support. They're not consolidating. They are taking the message from the natural resources tape and from bond market-based inflation expectations and saying, for now, we're out of here.
Yeah.
I think that portfolio managers, after the last 10 years of being positioned really heavily for deflation and then getting bailed out at the end of last year with the, you know, we had that big Omicron sniffles dip right after Thanksgiving weekend that everybody panicked over. There was a lot of de-risking. We saw it right in front of our face. Big tick index prints on the downside. A lot of stress in the markets. We spent, you know, the last couple of weeks of the year with the VIX around 25, 30. And that was really people just saying, OK, we've got to lighten up this rotation here. So now we're seeing the exact opposite of that, getting right back into that natural resources led type of movement. And because big tech is such a heavy weighting in the S&P right now, that probably leads to a little bit of a negative move in the broader index. Right. But if you're in the right sectors, who cares?
Yeah, that's really important, right? Because so much of the action was driven by those big tech names that when you're looking at the indices, and we saw today, the S&P 500 hit that intraday high that got pulled down when we saw that selling in tech. But if you're not exposed to that, the big market, then it's a different story. It looks very different for you.
Exactly, exactly. And if when I look back, Maggie, at last month, you know, we just spent sort of the month of December with a lot of volatility. And it was interesting to see that all the dollar index had to do was back off 40 basis points in December to set the Bloomberg Commodities Index free for a 3.5% rally, largely led by metals and mining stocks. We had oil and gas up 12% in addition, aluminum up 7% last month, grains up 4%, grains leading today. So these are the stories that keep reiterating themselves. And these are the ones that I'm expecting to keep showing their face this year.
Hey, everyone, we're going to take a quick break right now to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
I'm glad you brought up metals. I had the chance to sit down with Peter Brandt of Factor, who talked about his outlook for 2022, including his forecast. We hit pretty much every asset class, including precious metals. And he said something really interesting about silver. Let's have a listen to that.
Yeah, you know, of all the markets that I trade, I'm most constructive on silver, as a matter of fact. My biggest position right now, not counting real estate that I own, live in, rent, not counting kind of retirement equity positions, not counting a pretty good chunk I have in Bitcoin is in silver. I really like silver. Silver has come out, if you look at the chart of silver, you look at a weekly or monthly chart of silver, you know, we emerged back in early 2020 from a big base. Silver prices are cheap. You know, we were at $50 silver back in the 70s. We're at $50 silver back in the 90s. You know, we're at silver right now. We're in the 20s. We're in the mid-20s. I think silver goes to 30 this year, possibly to 50 next. And then I think silver has upside from there. And so when I look at gold and silver, I prefer silver. You know, I think silver is kind of, I call it the altcoin, the altcoin of metals, right? It's the one that's going to give you the big volatility in both directions. But I think silver prices are very reasonably priced. I think silver has a substantial upside potential from where we are. I own silver. I like silver. I'm bullish silver.
And that entire interview is available on Essential Plus and Pro Tier. So much good info in my conversation there with Peter. But I'm curious, Tony, to get your thoughts. I know you watch the metal space really closely. What are your thoughts on silver? Are you also bullish? And if not, is there something you like better?
My thoughts are I'm rooting for him. You know, Maggie, it's for me, I continue to point out that, you know, precious metals are struggling in a tape where natural resources are not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that may mean that people have thrown in the towel. It may mean it may be a positive thing where there's so little interest and they've been left for dead that eventually they wake up and surprise everybody. But my perspective is, you know, after the last year, just look at it, that we've seen so much headline inflation, right? I look over and silver is $24. Mm-hmm. And after a year that we've seen so much headline inflation, I look over and gold is $1,800. And I keep joking that that's an evergreen tweet. Like, look, there goes gold through 1800, right? Like, it just bobbles around that price. And so I don't have as much passion for it as he does. With any luck, I'll jump in and catch the trade if it starts going, because I'm not going to take my eye off of it for sure. I can just find other things that are performing better and doing better for my book than gold and silver right now. And that's what I'm all about.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I'm curious, Peter and I started out the conversation talking about currencies and the dollar, because his feeling is if he doesn't get that call right, then everything else, he can't execute on any of his other trades if he doesn't understand that macro call. What are your thoughts? Are you watching the dollar? Does the same apply for you?
Yeah, it does apply, but I got to tell you, Maggie, let me put Peter at ease a little bit. We just came out of a year, 2021, where the dollar index rallied 5% and the Bloomberg Commodities Index rallied 27%. Mm. So in my 30 years of trading, I haven't seen too many episodes where we have a really, really robust dollar move like that and commodities just leap out of the gate. Right. So I'm saying, you know, while I'm not as favorable towards gold and silver as Peter is, I don't know. I'm not going to sweat dollar strength too much this year. Right. It's going to be something where dollar strength means my commodity trade is probably going to work. Dollar weakness means my commodity trade is going to be blowing my hair back. We're going to be flying so high, right? I mean, that's just how it's been going. Yes. As evidenced by December. We finally get 1 month where there's a pullback in the dollar index, obviously at the expense of the euro, the yuan, and the Aussie dollar, but commodities are up and gone, right? They're not waiting around. So, you know, that's my sort of speedometer on the commodity trade is the dollar and the break evens, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. And he's also, I think fair to say, also thinking of them separately, maybe in this case, but bullish on the dollar and not influencing, you know, his commodity, also able to be bullish, certainly on his silver call and some ag commodities. So it is a really interesting time, and maybe some of those old tenants not really holding true in this environment for now. I want to get to a question from Jim on the exchange. Great, great questions today, by the way, coming in from the viewers and listeners. So thank you so much for that. And if you have any, pop them on the exchange or put them on the site or in the comment section on YouTube. Jim asks, are institutions underweight energy because of their reluctance to invest in a sector that's not viewed favorably in the ESG arena? Do they now have to revisit that decision and increase their exposure to oil and gas, essentially play catch up?
That is a great question. To me, that is my long play in the crude oil space, is that, you know, eventually the big E&P companies, or first of all, the large cap E&P companies are going to stay alive through this ESG period that we're in right now, because they're going to pivot to carbon capture, right? They've got all the tools necessary. And if we don't start with carbon neutrality from the source of pulling the oil out of the ground, we're never going to get there. So they're doing the right thing. They're long carbon credits. They are have gone into the business line of carbon capture and storage. And so that's, I think, going to keep them afloat for this ESG period where, yeah, Larry Fink is telling people to get out of fossil fuel stocks because we're not going to capitalize them. So I think the longer trade for me is to sort of figure out how to stay in these names for when the world realizes that they're still going to be the source to pull the gasoline out of the ground. And last I checked, gasoline demand is pretty strong globally right now, despite, you know, muddling through the virus, the pandemic, the lockdowns, all the nonsense. Gasoline demand is pretty strong given that situation. So in a fully reopened scenario, man, gasoline could pick up and go really fast because we've got growing demand and shrinking inventories. That's a story as old as it gets, right, Maggie?
Yeah. So, but you're saying that you are, I don't think taking comfort's the right phrase, but you are watching what they're doing in the cabin capture capture space as their transition play. So you're not scared off by the ESG mandate because of what they're doing in carbon capture. Easier for them to do than me to say, but you got me.
They're cooperating, right, Maggie? They're doing the responsible corporate thing and staying alive in periods of, you know, stress and times when there aren't, you know, the whole markets aren't going for them. But talk about how out of favor they are. I mean, E&P stocks have been the smallest percentage that they've been for 50 years in terms of their presence in the S&P. So I still think we have a long, long, long way to go on the upside if they're going to come back into favor. And I think that that can happen whether or not we're successful in our, you know, carbon neutral by 2030 plan or sort of whichever global plan you want to go by. I feel like no matter what, we're going to be kicking that can down the road, whatever the carbon neutral deadline is, because I think it's just going to be harder and harder in reality to get there as hard as they want to mash it on the tape. So what I think is that, you know, E&P hangs around through this whole entire period. And then, man, if we get through this and realize that it's just not going to happen as fast as the establishment would like it, where we're all on electric vehicles, et cetera, I still see a really, really bullish scenario for the E&P companies.
I want to ask you something about, we had the OPEC meeting today and some Ford news. I want to get to that, but we have a question. Since we're on this topic from Oliver from the site, are you long the carbon credit trade? We just talked about the companies getting into that business. Are you playing there yet? Or are you waiting?
I am
bullish. Or outside your area?
Yeah, no. It's in my area. It's a really popular topic in my Slack channel. We talk about carbon capture and storage, KRBN, all the time. We talk about it as it relates to the European energy crisis that's going on right now, which has obviously gotten a little bit of a reprieve from some warmer than expected weather. So natural gas isn't flying up through 200 euro per kilowatt hour again this week. It's rather been cut in half, which is a big relief for them. But I think that these are going to be the names that you have to stay in, you know, throughout this process. And then you can look at the, you know, carbon capture. I don't want to get away from that. It's a tricky, tricky trade, Maggie, right? Mm-hmm. In looking at it from 30,000 feet up, seeing how there's still a humongous balance of industrial companies that have to go carbon neutral, it's hard to think that the KRBN carbon credit ETF can back off much. Mm-hmm. Right. We've got a lot of companies out there putting a lot of carbon emissions into the atmosphere that are not carbon neutral yet. So they're the natural bid in KRBN. Right. At some point, they've got to figure out how to neutralize their carbon emissions. So I think that there's going to be a natural bid to the markets. You can see when the ESG picture sort of fails and comes apart and Europe comes under heavy stress and electricity prices are flying through the roof. The carbon credit trade backs off because everybody starts to think to themselves, hey, are they going to be able to force this on the tape, this carbon neutral by 2030? Or are they going to have to, like I said, kick the can down the road and say, okay, we've got to ease up because we don't have all the resources at our command to put the, to build the whole electronic infrastructure. So I'm kind of waiting to see how that pans out. A big failure in the ESG policy or a perceived failure by the markets is what I'm looking for as a final entry level to KRBN. So yeah, I'm hunting KRBN from the long side, but I'm kind of in the weeds with eye black on my face, and I'm kind of waiting for an event to knock it into my wheelhouse so I can put some bids in and buy it on the bid, because you can't buy it right now.
I love that visual, Tony. That's great. That's a great one. I want to talk a little bit about both. So it's interesting, this juxtaposition between, you know, what's happening in the oil markets, and then that ESG trade came up again today because we had OPEC meeting, say it's going to increase production, but there, it looks less clear that the members can actually deliver on that. You know, how are you, if we, I think we have a chart of WTI, how are you feeling about the oil trade? You know, do you see upside? Is there something you're targeting? What do you see happening there? First off,
I'm with Byron Wien, man. I'm a $100 bid. I really don't see how we get out of that scenario, given the situation right now with rising demand, shrinking inventories, squelching, exploration and production. We're not putting new rigs in the ground. You know, the scenario keeps getting more and more bullish for crude oil, if you ask me. The latest development, What I cling to when I hear OPEC is the Bank of America call over Thanksgiving weekend, coming out of Thanksgiving weekend, I should say, their response to the Omicron de-risking at Bank of America was to say, just so everybody knows, we don't think that Saudi Arabia has got the production to be able to control spare capacity. Right. So if they're taught, you know, that was their call that said, you know, the world thinks that Saudi Arabia has got 4 to 5 million barrels a day of spare capacity with which they can really control the oil markets. Mm-hmm. Bank of America saying, we think that's more like 1.5-2 million barrels, and it ain't enough. Mm-hmm. So I'm clinging to that call because it looks like that's what's transpiring on my screen. It looks like that was a really timely, well laid out call that they had sitting in their pocket and maybe rushed out into a de-risking to say, hey guys, we're the other way here. We're not into this oil sell-off at all. We think higher. So I respect that kind of call. And in as much as it's working, I can keep going with it. So that's kind of how I'm looking at it. I'm on Bank of America's side in terms of what's going to happen to the Brent market, most specifically as it relates to OPEC. And then that'll filter across the pond, no, undoubtedly.
And it's interesting because as we see this move up in oil, and the chart really, if you go back to, to 2020, and you're looking at, if you're looking at what's been happening, we've seen a big move, right? So if you look at that, and then you see Ford, what's happening in Ford, up 11% today, right? News, it's on the news that they plan to double production of it. It's all electrical, F-150. Lightning pickup. So you see this sort of, you see this action in the ESG that would presumably be an ESG play. Those two things can happen at the same time, I guess.
Yeah. What we see, what's good for Tesla is going to be good for the electronic vehicle market. And then when Ford comes out and confirms that they're going to be playing ball, I mean, I think that they could be a tremendous competitor for Tesla, given their infrastructure and ability to make large numbers of cars. This is not a move that I'm fading at all. Absolutely. This is all part of what we should be looking for, right? In the ESG trade, in the near term, we're going to see all of that electronic vehicle infrastructure and all those names and producers, those are going to rally. We're going to see carbon credits rally. We're going to see natural resources rally alongside them, because without aluminum and copper, we have no electric platform. So I think this is all part and parcel of the trade that we're looking for to happen. I'm not bullish for it, but I'm certainly not going to fade this move. I don't have any opinion on it whatsoever, other than it should probably work its way higher if Tesla is working like it is on such, I won't say meaningless data, but they're putting out several hundred thousand cars a quarter, where Ford puts out a couple of million. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that they're really competing for real just yet. They're just the front runner in the space and getting all the attention thanks to Elon. So we'll see what happens. Yep. It's a tricky trade. I kind of stay away from that direct electronic vehicle trade in terms of putting my dollars at risk, Maggie. But I'll talk about it all day.
Right. Absolutely. And the move in oil, by the way, not 2020, from the mid part of last month, sure. is what I think our chart was saying. And I was trying to get out of my mouth.
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why? And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
So we have a question. We were talking, I'm just going to zip back because I want to make sure we get it. We didn't talk about it in the metal conversation, but any thoughts on copper? Copper, you know, copper comes up interestingly a lot of times when you're talking about China and the outlook for China's growth. And we saw not only a million new COVID cases here in the US, but really China's still locking down entire cities. You know, that calls into question what we're trying to understand about what their growth outlook is. It's tough. I don't know that a lot of people have an awful lot of visibility on that. How are you viewing copper?
Well, I'm viewing it separate from COVID. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that that's clear. The market's done with COVID. Market does not care. After the bounce back that we saw after the Omicron sniffles dip, you can come out with three more variants and the market's going to go, those are nice. Right. And we're just not going to react to those anymore. So I'm keeping those separate. Copper, I'm a little bit of a broken record, Maggie. Copper has looked like it is going to curl over several times technically over the last year and a half. It has not been able to advance on the upside much through its historical highs around 10K. And so I think it's just in a holding pattern right now. I wouldn't short it with the Queen's money, but you know, I can remain constructive to copper because, like I say over and over, we're going into this electronic vehicle platforming stage with no copper inventories on the shelves. So if they want to build all this electronic inventory, they're going to have to pay consecutively higher prices for copper eventually. You know, so while it's not happening now, I haven't been long copper as a commodity in quite a while because it hasn't been given the signal that it's going to go anywhere. I've been staying long metals and mining stocks and Freeport-McMoRan, which are doing okay, but it feels like, you know, they have a little bit more upside in them with the equity rally right now. So we'll see what happens.
Are you looking at agricultural commodities at all? Just out of curiosity?
Yeah, my clients, I've suggested to my clients to be upsized in DBA, the ag ETF, for months now. Mm-hmm. And that is really just a corollary trade off of the energy trade, with energy being about a third of your cost of food production. The longer energy and gasoline stay up here, the more upward pressure it's going to put on soybean and corn and wheat prices and livestock as well. And now, with this cockamamie story about Biden going after meat producers for price collusion or whatever it is, I mean, you know, now we're going to start to talk about price controls, which generally place value in markets where markets would not find value. So trying to sort of put a cap on livestock or a cap on cattle prices or a cap on live hog prices is something that is usually going to backfire in the face of the person that's implying those price caps. So, you know, I'm not looking forward to how this is going to play out. This to me rhymes with Barack Obama boarding the coal industry and sort of turning the lights out. So I'm a little bit nervous about what's going on in the cattle markets right now.
Yeah, that came up. That's come up in some of our meetings and came up in my conversation with Peter Brandt as well. Not the policy as much, just the outlook for beef. I don't know if you're watching this. It's a sort of niche question. I'm going to throw it out. It's from Noah on the exchange. In reference to your ESG and resource views, any thoughts on the recent Rio Tinto acquisition of the lithium mines in South America? Is that something that's on your radar?
Vaguely, I saw the headline go by. You know, Rio is one of the members of one of the ETFs that I'm long, so that helps. You know, I'm not, I don't really drill down into individual names unless I'm a specialist in it, mm-hmm. Maggie. So that certainly sounds like the right strategic play right, to get your hold on some, get your hands on some lithium production as we head into the electronic vehicle play. Yeah. You know, maybe sort of streamline some of those operations, maybe make them a little bit more economically friendly, you know, dress them up a little bit, and maybe we can keep going down that road.
Fair enough. And for those who missed it earlier, you know, the videos live on Real Vision. We had a really in-depth dive look on all things related to EV, battery, rare earth metals with Chris Berry earlier this fall. So go ahead and check out that video. It's not going to comment directly on the Rio Tinto acquisition, but it's going to tell you everything you need to know about lithium. You know, we have some very philosophical comments and questions coming in from Fred. Who can we truly believe about market direction? And Oliver, do you think anyone actually knows for sure? It's starting off those existential questions, but there are a lot of cross currents that we have to get through, Tony. When you're sort of, you know, creating your strategy, I know you come at it from very much a trading perspective, but, you know, how are you kind of thinking about your portfolio? And especially when it comes to navigating, you know, the Federal Reserve environment, the interest rate environment, which is feeling a lot different. And it's something some people, frankly, if they're newer to the market, have never experienced.
Yeah, I'm sticking with my mantra of the Fed is inflating assets. And if you have assets, you're going to be okay, right? That's kind of the starting point. In terms of sort of, you know, the philosophical questions about the market, I mean, I'm a last sale bro type of guy. You know, so that's who you should be listening to in terms of where the market is going. And I think it's most important to sort of develop a secular view so that you wake up with that view in the morning and not say, okay, which way am I going to be today, bullish or bearish, right? I tend to wake up bullish every day and see what's going on because that's what the market has done for the last 30 years of my life, the last 3 years of my life, the last 3 months of my life, the last 3 weeks, 3 days, 3 hours, 3 minutes. It's all going up. So that's why I wake up bullish every day. And I think if you decide where you want to be, I'm not telling you you have to wake up and have the same view as me, but I think if you wake up with that view, that gives you the freedom to say, oh, stocks are coming off. That's great for me because I'm bullish. I get to buy them, right? Not always be in that, oh no, stocks are coming off. That was the top. That was the end, right? I mean, that's a fool's errand right there, right? So you have to figure out how to say, okay, stocks are rallying. I understand that. Stocks are pulling back. I'm bullish. I understand that. That's part of the dynamic of market, right? We trade the offered side, we trade the bid side, and we wind up where we wind up. And so, you know, that's kind of my approach for the year. And I'm really excited about one of the most vicious rotations that we've ever seen. And if the first 2 days is any inclination and for what we're in for, I'm not going to say for the whole year, but let's call it the first month of the year for my purposes, man, we're going to be off to a good start, aren't we?
I love it. It's so good to get our first Tony Tuesday underway for 22. Tony, thank you so much. I know you got to run. Thanks to all of you for watching. I'll be back the same time tomorrow with Darius Dale. Until then, the conversation continues on the exchange. Take care and good luck out there.